Welcome to Vermont Artists and Authors, where we interview great storytellers and artists from the amazing Green Mountain State. I'm your host, Barney Smith of StoryComic.com, and we're honored to have with us the nationally celebrated and award-winning children's book author and illustrator, Ashley Wolf.
Perfect Ashley. Pronunciation, Barney. Thank you.
See? Yeah, look at that. See? And it's exciting to talk to you. And anybody that's actually watching this or listening to this, I guarantee if you have children in your home, I guarantee your bookshelf has one of Ashley's books on the shelf. It's interesting because some of your books started off as, some of them you've illustrated for, some of them you wrote and illustrated for, and also some of them you've done through printmaking, some of them you've done through watercolors. You've also done many different types of illustrations.
Mm-hmm. So I started right after I graduated from art school. I went to San Francisco and lived there for a while, but then I really had the yen to put my illustration degree to work. And so I went back to New York and showed some of my printmaking work and other stuff and got my first book contract.
And so talk to us a little bit about that. You started off doing some of your artwork for children's book illustrations for other children's books authors, correct?
Well, I wrote and illustrated my first book. It was called A Year of Birds, and it did well. It did well enough to launch my career, and I've never looked back. Then I did. I took a public domain piece called The Bells of London. That was my second book. And then I did a book called A Year of Beasts, which was a follow-up to Year of Birds. And then I did Only the Cat Saw. So I would say out of my first four or five books, I wrote most of them.
And Only the Cat Saw, you wrote that when you were not living in Vermont.
None of the books I wrote were while I was living in Vermont. They were all after I'd moved to California.
And what I love about Only the Cat Saw, that was one of my daughter's favorite books reading, is because it almost feels like it's takes place in Vermont.
Oh, it totally does. Well, you know what they say, Barney, about authors, that their first books are always autobiographical. And so my first book was A Year of Birds, and it was largely autobiographical. It had many components that were very drawn from my growing up in Middlebury. And then it had some imagined components of the way I, you know, the place I wish I had grown up. Like, I never got to ride a school bus, but the girl in the book does. And I never had a pond on my property, but she has a pond. So, you know, it's wish fulfillment. That is the artist's prerogative. We can put whatever we want in the book. Right. And then Only the Cat Saw was an idea I had while living in California, but all the research for it was done on a farm on Munger Street in Middlebury. And I knew this lovely family. They had two little girls. I went out there and photographed their cat, their farm, their farmhouse, the children. And that's where all the material for that book came from.
So I'm also curious, Ashley, is that do you come up with an idea for a book, then decide the medium you're going to use? Or do you have a medium that you want to make a book on, and then you try to find a topic for that?
I think the former. The book, the idea, the story dictates the medium. And I, you know, it's not quite that simple, because I have occasionally started a book in one medium and then realized, this isn't working. I'm going to switch. So
really,
that doesn't happen often, but it has.
Is there a medium that you prefer that seems to be more of a, you're naturally more inclined to do children's books on?
Well, there are easier and harder mediums. Probably the easiest for me is I'm a great proponent of gouache, which artists will recognize the word. It's a French word spelled G-O-U-A-C-H-E. And it's pronounced like a G apostrophe W-A-S-H, gouache. And it's watercolor, but it has a lot of pigment in it. So it's more, it can be used opaquely, but it can also be used transparently. And I started using it back in the 90s, I think, when I was doing some advertising, you know, surface design work, and bought a set and thought, oh yeah, I'll just use this opaquely. But then I had it around and I started experimenting with it, and I realized, oh, it's like watercolor, except when you're done, it doesn't wash off the page. And so I have, you know, I'm the proselytizer for gouache for artists, because it's really forgiving, has all the same colors as Winsor & Newton watercolor. And it's the only paint you'll ever need.
So some of the books that you've done, as you mentioned, you've actually wrote and illustrated, and some other ones you are the illustrator for an author.
I tried to make a living along the way there. Right. And so mostly the books that I've done for other people have been my most successful books. Mm-hmm. So I learned a little lesson there, a little fiscal lesson that, like I illustrated Baby Beluga by Raffi back in, I don't know, 1989, yeah. Still in print, still making royalties. God bless Baby Beluga. So, you know, books, I mean, I don't know, most people don't really understand the economy of books, but if you are lucky enough to have a book that stays in print and continues to sell and sell and sell, you can make royalties every year. And all the work that you did was 30 years ago.
Those are physical pictures, right? Those aren't digital.
No, I've never worked digitally. I mean, I should probably, but you know, publishers are really perfectly fine with having you deliver work on paper.
Right.
They scan it and they kind of enjoy it, I think, as a novelty.
Right.
I have a book, I just sent in a book 2 weeks ago that's all on paper. And yeah, there's one step in between. They're scanning it. But, you know, pixels are meant to be manipulated. And once they're created by scanning, you know, they can be manipulated by the publishers as well as by me.
Do you still retain the ownership of those physical illustrations?
Yeah, every author does. I mean, or every illustrator. We own those under the, you know, Library of Congress.
Are you able then as you know, running your own business in this sense as an artist, is that you're able to put those out in, say, like art shows or sell those illustrations as well?
Yeah, it's funny you should bring that up, because I've just been corresponding with a museum in California that has been gifted three illustrations that I did back in the 90s. And they're like, oh, how are these done? What is the medium? You know, where are they from? And I sold a lot of my work back then. And, right. And you know, it's become somewhat detached from its original source. And so I've been sending them book covers and, you know, more information about the medium. So that's all to say that now I'm a lot less anxious to sell my work, because I just feel like when it breaks, when a book is broken up, it loses value.
Right.
Even though, you know, the illustrations aren't always, you know, equally frameable, it's good to keep it together. So
right.
That's what I do now.
Oh, so you sell them all as like not as individual pieces, but as like a collection then?
No, I just keep them.
Oh, you just keep them?
I'm not trying to profit from them at all at this point.
Right.
But right. I am thinking about, you know, posterity, and I'm thinking about places where, you know, illustrators and authors can donate artwork to several places around the country. There's a place in Minnesota called the Curlin Collection, which is anxious to acquire everything, like not just artwork, but sketches and letters from your editor and letters from your art director. And those things used to be a thing. Like, I did have letters. Now I don't have letters. I don't print out my emails. So all that discussion is done entirely in cyberspace. But, and then there's a place called the DeGrumman, which is in Mississippi. And I teach children's lit and art and design at Hollins University, which is in Virginia. And they're talking about trying to create an archive. And, you know, there's a lot of artwork floating out there, and I don't know where it's going. You know, it's grown a lot since I started.
So where have you seen the evolution of the children's books, the world of children's books?
Well, I mean, I'm old enough so that when I started, I was told that I would have to pre-separate my art. And that was in the early 80s. And I was like, what? I have to designate where the yellow and the red and the blue are going to go and where the yellow and the red are going to overlap. And I did one spread and it was awful. And then my small publisher called Dodd Mead finally entered, you know, the laser separation era. And I was saved at the last minute. My book was laser separated. And so that was in 83.
Yeah.
But they were late to the party. So other people had been doing it for a long time before that. And
right.
So that happened. And then, I don't know, it was just like a small world. It seemed big to me back then, but it was really small. And laser separation changed everything because, you know, nobody wanted to do that hand separation. So that kind of limited the field of people who wanted to be illustrators. And once that was, no longer an issue, the sky was the limit. You could do anything.
Right.
So it actually, you know, marked a exponential growth. Plus the 90s were huge and, you know, there was a lot of money around and there were a lot of kids being born. All the millennials were being born. And that, you know, drove the children's book industry. Not sure what's happening now. I know that people are, you know, there's definitely a baby bust going on right now and, you know, with good reason.
If someone's looking at wanting to get into children's book, being a children's book illustrator now, what advice would you give someone who's coming out of art school right now?
Well, I teach this every summer. So my big push when I'm a professor is learn to draw really well. And then once you've learned to draw, abstract and simplify and stylize. So let us know subliminally that you know what you're doing, but then go ahead and work in your style. And there are people who argue with me and say, oh, you know, there's lots of naive styles that just require two dots for a face. And I understand that argument, but I still think that the really appealing children's book illustration is going to be quite sophisticated, but disguised as naive.
It's like the point, too, that you brought up in a previous interview as well. Is like when it comes to writing a children's book, you're supposed to be very specific with your words and not, how did you phrase it? It's like, don't make your words suppose too much. When it comes to illustration, there seems to be so much room for detail and allowing. How important is writing a children's book or making a children's book that has the repeatable readability to it?
Well, that's a really good question because, you know, it's kind of a magical combo of, you know, text and concept. Concept is really important. And then the illustrations. So, a really great example in my experience is, say I gave you the sentence, the little white dog was wearing a red coat. And I say, okay, Barney, which one of those words is really necessary? And, you know, if you really work your way through them, none of them are necessary because, you know, they're all either nouns or verbs or adjectives. So instead, you could say something like, Rufus was late for his appointment. And then there's things you don't know. You don't know who's Rufus. You can probably surmise he's male. But, you know, what is he? He's late for which appointment? How is he going to get there? How does he feel about it? It has so many possibilities compared to the little white dogs wearing a red coat. Right. And so when I work with students on writing, you know, I'm, you know, take out all the adjectives, take out all the adverbs, and look very hard at every noun and verb and conjunction to see whether they're really needed or what you could put in instead, which are things that an illustrator can't show, like, you know, sounds and smells and feels and, you know, some action and emotions. And so, yeah, I mean, it's quite an interesting art form. It requires brevity, but most people never see the effort that goes into it.
Have you actually been approached with a book, with a manuscript? You said, this isn't for me. Have you ever been able to be in that position where you said, I don't want to do this book?
Yeah, quite a few times. And in fact, the book I just finished, I wish I had been able to say that about.
Really?
But I didn't.
Right. Have there ever been opportunities, because you say like it's the children's book illustration field, and the children's books, it's a really big world, but it's also pretty small. Mm. Have you ever seen a book where you would say, oh, I wish I illustrated that one. That would have been fun.
Yeah.
In those positions.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So one of the trends that I've noticed, and, you know, I'm sure I'm not alone in this, is that you illustrate a book. You either write and illustrate it or you just illustrate it. And it's a big hit. And then the next five books you get are exactly the same book or, you know, slight variations on that theme. And if you are fast and facile and basically don't really care about your body of work, you do them. Because, you know, they're easy. You just did those. You can do them again. I am not that fast or facile. And I always thought, I think I might be bored doing this again. So I usually turn those down. But so I'm always on the search for the next new thing.
It's in a way, it's almost as you're like children's book illustrators. Do you also get to the point where, almost like Hollywood actors, you could get typecast?
Oh,
like,
yeah, totally.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
And so yeah,
and what that's really boring. And actors, I'm sure, feel the same way.
So what are some of the dangers that you've always felt like that you wanted to make sure that you weren't, quote unquote, typecast as a specific type of illustrator?
Oh, cute baby animals. Yeah. I'm really good at those. But I didn't want to do them over and over and over. I'm trying to think if I ever... So I got rid of my second agent quite a few years ago. And I think that happens more when you have an agent because, you know, they're showing your work to art directors and the art directors know you for a certain style and subject matter. And they say, oh, I've got this manuscript. It would be perfect for this illustrator because look what she's done already. And so I got fed up with that back in, I don't know, like 2011 and ditched my agent. And so I've been agentless ever since. And so far, so good.
Right. So it's almost like kind of like being a free agent in that sense where you
can. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And scary. It has the scary parts too.
Does this give you a bit more freedom to pursue not a style, but a genre of children's book that you've always wanted to do as well?
Yeah, but I have always done that. So right. I think I was always a frustration to my agent. I kept certain publishers and editors apart from her. And it's hard for me to describe how the business side of publishing has affected me because it's not my favorite part of it at all. You know, right. if I could ignore the whole selling book side, I would be such a happy person. And I know that most people feel that way. I think those of us who have success, it's usually an unexpected success. We didn't plan this. If we'd known that this combination of love and daddy and something in the title would be a success, everyone would be doing that.
Right.
Successes are rare. They're weird. And they are very dependent on, you know, what's happening culturally in the world and in parenting and childhood. So who would have predicted Harry Potter? Who would predict Where's Waldo? You know, all these things sort of come out of the blue. And then they blow up and become huge, and then they're gone.
Right.
And so you never know. So I never wanted to try to bank on that. I just went my own way and have had some big successes and some big duds.
Right. So talk to us a little bit then, Ashley, about like your process. I mean, like, what's the day in the life of Ashley Wolf? How does that work?
Well, I've always been self-employed since I was in my 20s. So my favorite time to work is between about 3 and 9 at night.
Wow. Okay.
For some reason, mornings are a good time for me to get other stuff done. And then unfortunately, when you have children, those hours don't work for you at all. That's when they get home from school and you have to make dinner and then put them to bed. Right. So I usually worked from 9 to 1 and also in the morning. I always lived in a house or an apartment in San Francisco. I had a dog and I had 2 little boys who went to school and yeah, I got a lot done. I don't know how.
You made time.
It's the ADD, you know, you just if you were to look at my desk right now, Barney, you'd be you might be a little shocked because I have a lot of different things going on and that's normal. I don't sit and work on one project. I have maybe 4 or 5.
So Ashley, if people want to, you know, learn more about your books and learn more about you, where's the best place they could go to?
Well, I have a website, ashleywolf.com, because way back. You know, I snagged that name and nobody else has wanted it. Imagine. And I am active on Instagram and Facebook, although pretty much just for fun. Right. You know, I have an Etsy shop. So I've had that for a long time. And yeah, I sell a lot of stuff through that, mostly prints and, you know, not a whole lot of originals, but yeah, like that. I'm not super prolific when it comes to publicity. I know that it's important, but I don't prioritize it.
Going to your Etsy shop. So it's etsy.com/shop/AshleyWolfArt. Mm-hmm. You're able to get some amazing pieces of artwork from an award-winning children's book illustrator. Absolutely. For those folks that might have somebody that might appreciate her style of art, this is going to be a great Christmas present. It's amazing. Look at that. And you get a lot of stuff here for sale.
Yeah. Cause I'm really restless and I'm always creating stuff. Oh yeah. So last year on January 1st, I got this crazy idea to do a year of birds.
Wow.
And my first book was called A Year of Birds and it was published in 83. And I thought, all right, for 2022, I'm going to do a year of birds. Oh my God, it broke my neck. But I did it. I did 365 paintings of birds.
Wow.
Yeah. It was really something. I was obsessed with that. Right. But I don't think I would do that again. It was just too much. It just drove everything else out of my life. I divided it up into themes by month and, I had some really cool themes.
Check out, go to ashleywolf.com and there you have the link to your Instagram page, a link to all your books, and also checking out, going to your shop there that has your link to your Etsy page as well. Wow. That is a lot of
artwork.
Yeah. That's amazing.
But, you know, there's some birds here that are not, you know, customer favorites. They're a little bit more obscure. Mm-hmm. So all the easy ones are sold.
Right.
So I'm a printmaker. You can see that I do linoleum block prints. I've always done that. Many of my books have been illustrated with linoleum block prints.
Wow.
And I sometimes teach online. I'm teaching a class right now called Kitchen Table Printmaking, where I have a bunch of students who are all over the country and they're learning to do linoleum block prints.
Wow.
And it's fun. Yeah. I mean, right. COVID gave us some silver linings. It gave us Zoom and, you know, remote teaching. Yeah.
Yeah. You got your Miss Bindegarden.
Got some Miss Bindegarden stuff in there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. I'm kind of a Bob Marley fanatic.
Well, listen, Ashley, this was a genuine pleasure. It's been I've been excited to talk to you for a while now, ever since I've been, you know, having all of your children's books around the house. So
I'm glad you do. I'm glad you have a kid who's still in my zone.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Ashley.
Barney, it's been my pleasure. It's really fun to discover you. Coming back to Vermont has been, you know, a great reunion with my past, and I'm happy to be here and to stay here.